Exodus 1. And the section of the passage or this chapter that I want to start with is in verses 8. So we're going to read from verse 8 to verse 14. So look down there at verse number 8. It says, "Now there arose up a new king over Egypt, which knew not Joseph. And he said unto his people, Behold, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we. Come on, let us deal wisely with them, lest they multiply, and it come to pass that when there falleth out any war, they join also unto our enemies and fight against us, and so get them up out of the land. Therefore they did set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens. And they built for Pharaoh treasure cities, Pithom and Ramses. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew. And they were grieved because of the children of Israel. And the Egyptians made the children of Israel to serve with rigor, and they made their lives bitter with hard bondage, in mortar and in brick, and in all manner of service in the field. All their service wherein they made them serve was with rigor." So here we pick up this story. Joseph's already gone. He's in heaven. And there's a new king and doesn't know Joseph, doesn't understand the blessings and all the stuff that came on before that. And so we start off by reading Pharaoh's paranoia. You know, he's like, if these guys multiply, we're in big trouble. You know, he's just a paranoid, typical, you know, paranoid dictator type, you know, type leader. And so what he does is he assigns taskmasters, these people that want, basically supervisors, bosses that are very hard, and they make the job of the children of Israel very difficult, you know, to accomplish their tasks. And that's why it says it made them serve with rigor. Now, the title of my sermon is "How to Thrive and Become a Great Leader in Today's Wicked Workforce." How to thrive and become a great leader in today's wicked workforce. And notice what I didn't say. I didn't say how to survive. I said how to thrive. You see, no matter what happens, what situation that you find yourself in at work, what your boss is like, what their boss is like, or what your, you know, whatever the situation is, you can thrive. You don't have to just have this mentality that you just have to survive. Because if that's your mentality, you go to work every day and your boss is, maybe you have a real hard boss, right? And he's just down on you. Or maybe you're a mother, right? And you're just, maybe you're not, you know, things just aren't going well for you, right? You're still in a leadership position. You can still thrive past that. You know, I mean, you take your kids to the store around here, right? And what do you see? A bunch of freaks, psychos. You know, that's your workplace, right? So this does apply to you. Keep your place here in Exodus chapter 1, but turn to Revelation chapter 1. Turn to Revelation chapter 1, because you see, having a bad work environment, if you don't have the right perspective, it can really be hazardous to your health. I mean, I don't know how many people I know that just hate their jobs, you know, Christians, people that are saved, or people that are not even saved, and it just all they can think about is just bitter. They just get bitter, you know, they just can't seem to do right, and it's because they don't have the right perspective. And I'm going to teach you tonight from the Bible how to work past that. So in Revelation chapter 1, so who does this sermon apply to? It does apply a lot to the workforce. That's mainly what I'm talking about tonight. But this sermon applies to everybody, all of us. So look down there, Revelation chapter 1. Look at verse 5. It says, "And from Jesus Christ, who is the faithful witness and the first begotten of the dead, and the prince of the kings of the earth, unto him that loved us and washed us from our sins in his own blood, and hath made us kings and priests unto God and his Father. To him be glory and dominion forever and ever. Amen." So if you look there in verse 6, what does that say? That Jesus Christ hath made us kings and priests. You see, no matter where you're at in life, whether you're young or whether you're old, if you're saved, you're a king and a priest. You are a leader. And because we are all leaders, we have to act the part, right? It's not good enough just to be a good Christian and act like a leader when you're at church, right? We need to do that everywhere in life. You know what? And sometimes when you have a harsh taskmaster at work, it makes it very difficult. The other day, I was installing a dishwasher for this lady. It's first thing in the morning. You know, I call the customer. Her husband answers. And I could already tell this wasn't going to be a very pleasant experience. And you know, when you're dealing with customers, those are your boss, right? Temporarily, that person is my boss. I have to provide them a service. They hired me to do them a service. And so I get there. She answers the door, and she's like, "Oh, are you the dishwasher guy?" I'm like, "Yeah." And she goes, "Okay, well, I've got a big problem I've got to show you." So she walks me into her kitchen, and she's like, "You see, my dishwasher is full of dishes." I'm like, "All right." She's like, I was like, "Okay." And she's like, "Well, that's probably going to make it hard for you to take it out, huh?" I'm like, "Yeah, it's going to be a little difficult, you know, because they get an email telling them, you know, please clear under the sink, please empty the dishwasher, you know, stuff like that." And she's like, "Well, what do most people do in this situation?" And I couldn't help it, all right? This probably isn't the best thing to say, but I didn't know what else to say. I was like, "Most people take their hands, they grab the dishes, and they take them out." She's like, "Oh, really? I'm not kidding." That's what she says. She's like, "Oh, really? Well, how's that going to work?" I was like, "Look, I'm just going to take the racks out." So I take the racks out. I set them down. She's like, "Oh, thanks, because my housekeeper filled it full of dishes." Obviously, she doesn't know what's going on around here, you know. And I'm telling Jessica this story, you know. And she's like, "You know, the scariest part about that is that this woman drives a car, you know." And you know, I'm thinking, yeah, you know, you're right. I mean, this is someone's daughter, right? This was someone's granddaughter. This is someone's wife. But you know what I found out before I left? That this was someone's boss. This was someone's authority. You know, and that's, I mean, think about it. She doesn't have enough common sense to empty her dishwasher. She's like, "Well, how is this going to happen?" Well, how about doing this, man? You know, but that's the stupidity that we have to deal with sometimes. You know, and for that moment in time, she became my taskmaster to make my job harder. You know, but there's a way that we have to deal with that in the workplace. And you know, I wasn't really mad until after I left. I think God really, really blessed me, kind of helped me work through that and to stay calm. But nonetheless, the point is that we have to be able to work past these things because, look, all of us are leaders. Turn to Philippians chapter 2. Turn to Philippians chapter 2. So what are we talking about? We're talking about leadership or how to become a good worker, you know, even when conditions are horrible. You know, I mean, we all have someone to lead. We have, you know, the Bible says that we're all kings and priests. That means we have our own Christian lives to lead about, right? We have to be able to lead our old man and put that man into subjection and lead in the new man, rather. So turn to Philippians chapter 2. So why do we need this sermon? What's the whole point? Why do we need it? Philippians chapter 2, look at verse 14. Do all things without murmurings and disputings. Look at verse 15. That ye may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God, without rebuke in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom ye shine as lights in the world. You know, and this applies to us. I know Paul's talking to the Philippians here, but, you know, we do live in a crooked and perverse nation. I don't know about you, but where I work, it's, you know, people are pretty nasty, pretty perverse, pretty lazy. You know, I was institutionalized for a long time because before I moved here, I worked for the government. And I'm going to tell you some stories later about that. But, you know, it just seemed like that job that I had with the government was like maybe 10, 15 years, you know, back in the past, maybe 20 years. You know, it just seemed like there was still a decent amount of hard workers, you know. And I get this new job, you know, and people are just having a hard time doing anything. You know, their best workers are people that'll work half a day. You know, if you want to be a good worker, it's not that hard in today's workforce. It's really not, you know, but there are some things that we have to manage and some things that we have to learn in order to excel, to go beyond, beyond and above. And, you know, the whole goal of the sermon is just to make sure that we don't become that middle of the road kind of worker, right? You don't want to just be average. You know, we're supposed to be that light that shines, you know, in the world. And you're not going to be a very good light if you're, you know, always bitter. You know, you let that taskmaster just bog you down, just get you down. It's going to ruin our testimony. And so that's the whole point. And so I want to talk real quick about attitude types. You know, there's a lot of different leadership styles out there. You know, you got your charismatic leader. You got your what's called the laissez-faire leader, the guy who just kind of lets you do whatever you want. Or you got the buddy leader, the guy that wants to be your friend, right? And then you have the one that that most people have a problem with, and that's an autocratic leader. Does anybody know what that means? An autocratic leader is somebody kind of like Hitler, right? Somebody who doesn't want to take suggestions from the people that are doing work. They don't want to take any kind of input. It's my way or the highway. That kind of leadership works pretty good in the military. But the problem with that is that you put your name on a contract and you have to do what you're told. So it doesn't really matter. So you can have that kind of mentality. Or in nations where the dictator will just blow you away if you don't do what they're told. You know, if that's the situation you're in, then yeah, that kind of leadership works well. But it does have its cons too, because it basically just puts people on autopilot. Okay, I'll just do what I'm told. They're never going to go, you know, think and develop that mentality to succeed. And so in the workforce, say you have managers and you have leaders, right? The difference between a manager and a leader is a manager is worried about schedule and budget and process. That's it. That's all they care about, right? Whereas a leader, his job is supposed to be able to motivate people to do things that they don't want to do. Right, and that's what we need to do for our own Christian lives, for our families, for those around us, and even in the workplace. Look, just because you're an employee and maybe you're not a supervisor, that doesn't mean you can't be a leader. You can be a leader because when you get in charge, you can control the environment that you work in. right? When you get promoted at your job or you start a business, you know, you control that radio dial, right? You control the perverse conversations. You know, then you have the authority to tell people, hey, shut your mouth. That's disgusting. I don't want to hear that garbage. I mean, it's a big deal. Go back to Exodus chapter 1. Go back to Exodus chapter 1. And like I said, this sermon's heavily focused on how to thrive in the workplace. And the way that I would run a crew in the workplace is different than how I would run a church. The Bible's very clear about how to run a church, right? So some of the things that I would do to just regular people out in the workforce, some of the decisions I would make would not be the same as a church. So this sermon is not on how to run a church. So turn back to Exodus chapter 1 and look down at verse number 11. It says, therefore they did set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens. And they built for Pharaoh treasure cities, Pithom and Ramses. So look what we have here. We have the taskmasters they get assigned to the people, right? They afflict them by imposing restrictive regulations on them. But notice what happens. Notice what happens. And they built for Pharaoh treasure cities, right? So point number one is just because you have an evil boss doesn't mean you can't get work done. Just because you have a harsh person in control of you at your job does not mean that you can't get work done. Because, you know, you might think, oh, he's not paying attention. He only cares about his friends, right? And you know what? That's true, but God sees, you know, and that's all that matters. And we're going to talk more about that. I'm going to tell a story here. When I was working for the government, so basically what I did, we were a temporary services shop, trade. And when a submarine or an aircraft carrier would come into dry dock or pierside, we would basically provide them with like the umbilical cord to stay alive because they're not out at sea. So if a ship comes into dry dock, all, you know, they float it in, they pump the water out slowly, the ship sets down on blocks, and then we basically run all these services so that they can still act as though they were in water, if that makes sense. Well, this was a few years ago. We just docked the Seawolf inside the dry dock, and I was a supervisor at the time, and the shop superintendent, the top guy in my organization, didn't like me, and I'll get into why later. Well, he sent out an order. He took away half my crew, gave me a bunch of novices, you know, right after we docked the boat, which is horrible because that's a critical time. That's a time where I need people to set up these services. It was a horrible thing. And he somehow got a hold of my boss and made him give me this horrible task, which I thought was horrible. My boss calls. He says, hey, meet me out on the pier. And he looks at all these pallets. And he's like, hey, is that your stuff? Is that your stuff? I'm like, no, that's so-and-so's. That's so-and-so's stuff. He's like, okay. And then he's like, look down in the dry dock. You see those 24 pallets down there? I'm like, yeah. He's like, you need to have those moved by 2 o'clock. And I think this is like right after lunch, so like 12:15, somewhere around there. And he says, you need to have this done by 2:30. Now, keep in mind, that wasn't my job. All that stuff had nothing to do with me. That was all the other trades. That was welders, sheet metal workers, shipwrights, people that build scaffolding, contractors, all these other people. I'm like, well, what's going on here? You know, why do I have to do that? That's what I was thinking, but I was like, all right, I'm going to do it anyways. I'll just go get my buddy, you know, the riggers that drive the forklifts, and I'll get that stuff out of the dry dock. Well, I go over there to the guy, and he's like, I can't help you. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? You can't help me. He's like, I don't know, dude. I just can't help you. I'm like, man, talk about, you know, taking away my ability to make brick, you know, and straw. But he's like, yeah, I don't know. I can't tell you why. I just can't help you. So nobody wants to help. And so I've got, you know, half my crew, three quarters of my crew doing busy work. They're doing other things that are very important. I've got two guys. One guy's been around for about a year, and we'll call him Bark because, you know, that's about the amount of work that he would do. You'd have to basically peel him off of his chair, like you'd have to peel bark off of a tree to get him to do anything. And then once you did, he would do a lot of work, but he wouldn't do anything of his own initiative. And so this is where I learned a lesson. You know, as a leader, you have to be able to find ways to motivate people. And sometimes you might have to bend the rules a little bit. You know, I'm stressing out here. It's like 1 o'clock. I'm like, man, how am I going to get this stuff done? So what I did is I said, hey, you guys, you want to go home at 2 o'clock? I'm like, yeah, I want to go home at 2 o'clock. It's like, find a way to get those pallets out. What they did is they ran and grabbed two pallet jacks. And these dry docks, they have a big elevator. I mean, you could fit a full-size truck in there, and they just went up and down the elevator and got them out. And then the next day, my boss comes up, and he's like, how'd you do that? You weren't supposed to be able to get all those out. I'm like, dude, what's going on, man? And he's like, I can't talk about it. And he just walks away. Well, it turns out it was from the head, the shop head there that just didn't like me. He just wanted to mess with me. And like I said, I'll explain more why later. And if these stories seem kind of choppy, I have to change people's names and certain things, because the job comes with a secret security clearance, right? And there's some things I can't say, and so I want to be very careful at what I say. But turn to Colossians chapter 3. So point number one is, just because you have an evil boss doesn't mean you can't get work done. Where there's a will, there's a way. There is always a way for you to get work done. And at the end of the day, that's what matters, is getting things done. But how do we accomplish this? How do we do that when our bosses or our management, our organizations are making things difficult, our surroundings? How do we do that? How do we accomplish work? Well, I'll tell you, you're going to do it by having the right attitude and the right outlook. Colossians chapter 3, look at verse 23. It says, "And whatsoever ye do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men." That is key. It says, do it heartily. What does that mean? With your whole heart. Look, you have to be there for 8-10 hours a day. You might as well do it with your whole heart. You know what I mean? You might as well just give it your all, no matter what the cost. That's what the children of Israel did. You know, they just continued to work. I mean, sure, I'm sure people complain, and you know, sometimes we have valid complaints, but that doesn't, or that shouldn't take away your drive and your ability to actually get stuff done. Just because you have an evil boss doesn't mean you can't get work done. And another thing, you know, we need to realize that, you know, if you're not the boss, then don't worry about it. You don't have to worry about it. You know, just recognize that when you get done a lot of work, that people will start noticing. Someone's going to notice. Maybe his boss will notice. You know, or maybe his boss will notice. Now people will start talking, but you know what? More important than all of that is God notices. And that's what this verse is saying. "And whatsoever ye do, do it heartily as unto the Lord and not unto men." You see, that's a simple thing, right? But when you make that change in your mind, it really changes your perspective, and it makes working a lot easier. It makes all the garbage surrounding you, it just makes it like nothing, because you're like, you know what? I don't care about you. I'm working for God. I'm here to please God. I'm not here to please man. I'm not here to please you. I'm not here to go to your parties. I'm not here to play your softball game. I'm not here to play, you know, Call of Duty with you at all hours of the night and go to the bars and stuff like most of these idiots out there do. I'm here to work for God. What you do for the, you know, in your organization, in your workplace, matters to God big time. So just to recap, point number one is, just because you have an evil boss doesn't mean you can't get a lot of work done. So turn to Exodus chapter 2. Look at Exodus chapter 2. Exodus chapter 2, look at verse 23. Exodus chapter 2, verse 23, it says, "And it came to pass in the process of time that the king of Egypt died, and the children of Israel sighed by reason of the bondage, and they cried, and their cry came up unto God by reason of the bondage." So what do we have here? Pharaoh finally dies. The children of Israel, they cry out to God because of their bondage, and those cries go up to God. So point number two is, as the children of God, which we are, as God's children, we need to realize that we can be delivered, and we will be delivered from our current situations if you ask. Right? Are you in bondage right now? Do you feel like you're in bondage? Wherever you're at your workplace, in your family, in your home, with your, you know, your not immediate family. If that's the case, God will deliver you if you ask. And I know that's a simple thing. We hear that all the time. But you know what? A lot of times we just don't do it. You know, we just don't do it. We just get bitter. And look, I'm telling you, when you get bitter about your situation, that's all you can think about. And you will forget to do these steps. I'm telling you. Psalm chapter 34, verse 4 says, "I sought the Lord and he heard me and delivered me from all my fears." See, that's the key there, is we need to seek the Lord. He's going to hear us, right? But we have to do our part. We actually have to seek him. We actually have to go and pray and recognize our condition and ask, you know, and be faithful and consistent in that, and then he will deliver you. I promise you, he will definitely deliver you. James chapter 4, verse 2, "Ye lust and have not, ye kill and desire to have and cannot obtain. Ye fight in war, ye have not because ye ask not." A lot of times we're stuck in these situations, not just because God wants to test us, but probably because we just don't ask to get out. You know, there's nothing wrong with saying, "Hey, Lord, please deliver me from these taskmasters." You know, that's what the children of Israel did here in chapter 2, and God delivered him. He heard their cries. So I got another story. I was in Japan, what was it, 2012, the second time I was there? Was that 2012? It doesn't matter, but I was working for this guy. We'll just call him Slimeball because that's really what he was. This guy was a dirtbag of all dirtbags. I mean, the biggest slimeball you could possibly imagine. I mean, you want to talk about an evil taskmaster? That was this guy. This guy was straight from Pharaoh, straight from hell. You know, so I'm over there, and there's about three of us that would do work out of a crew of, I don't know, maybe 10 of us. And, you know, you just unfair treatment after unfair treatment. You know, he'd always be letting these other people go home. And his big thing was he wanted people to play softball. He wanted people to play Call of Duty. He wanted people to be his buddy outside of work. That's how he measured work performance. That was his whole thing. I mean, he's just a big, huge pervert. He would give you job assignments and be real vague about it. You know, and then you'd go do it, even after asking him questions, and he'd come back and be like, you're an idiot. Why'd you do it like that? I can't believe you did that. That looks like garbage. And make you redo it. I don't care. I get paid by the hour, so I'll do whatever you want for that time while I'm here. You know, that was my attitude. But I began to apply these things in the Bible and just not let it get to me. But, you know, one day he's doing evals, right? And he takes me outside, and he's like, hey, so I heard this big deal about you, like you were this great worker and stuff. He's like, you know, you've been here for about 5 months now. You show up every day. You stay late. You do just kind of do your job, and then you just go home. He's like, is that really the kind of person you want to be? I was like, yeah. He's like, well, that's fine if that's how you want to be, but don't you think you should have, like, some social interaction or, you know, just be a little nicer outside of work? I was like, well, what have I done outside of work? He's like, well, that's the thing, nothing. You know, he's like, I figured you'd come here and just start flipping tables, you know, and all this stuff and just take charge and get these lazy bums to do what they want. I'm like, well, you already got your work leader picked out, man. What do you need me for? He's like, I don't get it. You know, you just show up and do work and leave, and you're just too quiet. I was like, you know what? I'm confused about this whole eval, this whole conversation. He's like, I am too. I'm like, what's going on? He's like, I don't know. I just don't want to talk to you anymore. And I'm thinking, like, this is great. Is this guy on drugs? Are you on drugs? What is wrong with you? And he's like, I guess I'm just going to, like, leave you sticky notes and see what happens, you know? So I'm like, all right, whatever. And he did kind of leave me alone after that and just quit talking to me. And I was like, man, what an idiot. Well, I want to say 2 or 3 weeks later, I wound up getting promoted. Now, I didn't do the apprenticeship. Our job, you have the option to do an apprenticeship. It's a 4-year deal. Basically, you go to school for 2 weeks, and then you come back to the job for 2 weeks. Well, it's not an apprenticeship like some of you guys that are electricians or plumbers or welders. It's for a special trade, and you can't really take it outside of you know, the organization. So I declined to do that early on in my career because what I saw was people would go to school for 2 weeks, come back and not know what's going on. You know, they got used to sitting down in the classroom and just being lazy. So I figured I could just, you know, learn this job faster if I don't do it. And so I didn't do it. And I still got promoted before all of them, before every single one of them. And he doesn't even realize it. So I get promoted. One day I'm walking, into the locker room, taking off my work stuff, and I hear these people talking about me. They're like, I can't believe that idiot got promoted. I'm like, man, they're talking about me. And I go outside, and this girl, which, you know, the crew girl, nothing against women, but she was a whore. And I don't know any more mild way to say it, you know. It's just what it was. And she's like, so, enjoying that new money you got, huh? I was like, yeah, I'm laughing all the way to the bank, you know? And she's like, well, I've been here longer than you. It's not fair that you got promoted. I said, hey, it is what it is. You don't do any work. You're lazy and you're weak. That's why I got promoted and you didn't. And she's like, well, guess what? I'm telling on you. I was like, yeah, you that's what they always do. I'm telling on you, you know? And I was like, besides, we're off the clock right now. So have fun. And I just laughed. And then later on, the boss, he comes back up to me. He's like, I see in the computer you've been promoted for like 3 weeks now. Why didn't you tell me? I'm like, why didn't you tell me? You know, you're in charge, not me. You know, and so that's just a kind of a silly story there. But, you know, just because you have an evil boss doesn't mean that you can't get promoted. And as the children of God, see, I had asked to be relieved of this guy, of this burden. And God did that through, you know, while I was over there. And, you know, he would consistently just talk bad about me and stuff like that. I just didn't let it get to me. And there was his best buddy was he used as his work leader, even though I now outranked him. He would never give me charge of a job. You know, I mean, this was a situation like where I would do a job you know, with my partner, and then this dude would take credit for it. You know, that kind of garbage. But even through all that, I still got promoted. And it's not just because, oh, I'm a hard worker, I'm smart. It's because God looked down on me and rescued me. And if he'll do it for me, he'll do it for any of us. Do it for all of us. So what I'm saying is, don't let the taskmasters get you down. You don't have to do that. It's all about keeping the right perspective. So turn to Psalm chapter 75. We'll talk about promotions here for a second. Psalm chapter 75. Psalm chapter 75. So just a quick recap. Point number one was, just because you have an evil boss doesn't mean you can't get work done. And number two is, as the children of God, realize that you can be delivered from your current situation if you just ask. If you just ask. So Psalm chapter 75. I mean, think about this. The children of Israel asked, and they got quite the promotion, didn't they? When all was said and done, they went from being in hardcore bondage to being one of the greatest nations that ever existed on this earth while God was in control. So Psalm 75, look at verse number 4. Psalm 75, verse 4. It says, I said unto the fools, deal not foolishly, and to the wicked, lift not up the horn. Verse 75, look at verse 5. Lift not up your horn on high, speak not with a stiff neck. Now verse 6. For promotion cometh neither from the east, nor from the west, nor from the south. But God is the judge. He putteth down one and setteth up another. I memorized this a long time ago. I heard this from a Baptist preacher, and I just thought it was great. You know, I would encourage every single person to memorize this, or at least know where to find it and apply this to your life. Right? What is he saying? Look at verse 5. It says, lift not up your horn on high. Speak not with a stiff neck. Don't be in your workplace bitter. You know, don't be pride, all puffed up with pride. Don't be like the Roman soldiers that were like, we deserve more wages. You know, whatever you're getting paid is what you're getting paid. Don't be bitter about that. You know, you'll eventually get paid what you're worth. God will make sure of that. You know, but you're not going to get more pay. You're not going to get those raises. You're not going to get that increase if you have a stiff neck, if you're full of pride and you're puffed up and you think that you're better than you really are. Humility is what lifts people up, not pride, not being puffed up. And he says, for promotion cometh neither from the east, nor from the west, nor from the south. Promotion doesn't come from your boss. Think about that. Your promotion doesn't come from your boss. It comes from God. That's what this is saying. It says, but God is the judge. He putteth down one and setteth up another. And when you do things God's way, he's going to promote you. Do you want to go from being a good mother to a great mother? Memorize this verse. Do what God said, and it'll happen for you. Do you want to go from being a good husband to a great husband? Same thing. Good grandparent, great grandparent, same thing. Good employee to the best employee, this is how you do it. You want to go from being an employee to being a supervisor? This is your verse. Understand that, because what that does is it changes your outlook, right? Because it really cements the fact that you're not at work to please man. Just because your boss might be a slimeball, you know, and he, you know, gives credit to other people when you do work, don't even worry about it. Don't bat an eye on it, because it's just going to cause you pain. It's going to cause you physical illness. It's going to cause your work performance to decrease, and it's just overall bad. It's just a horrible thing. But when you apply these verses to your life, it makes things better. It just lifts that burden off your shoulders, and it really is an encouragement. So stay humble by not lifting up your horn, and realize that God holds the power of promotion in his hands. Turn to James chapter 3. James chapter 3. And see, because when we make the choice to act and do things the way that God wants us to do them, it really helps let go of bitterness, because that's the main thing, right? When you have an evil boss or you have some jerk at work that's really messing with you, it's that bitterness. That's what creeps in. That's what slows us down. Bitterness, it just piles on and heaps up, and it just keeps building on itself. The next thing you know, you can't do your job well. You might be able to do a mediocre, but you're not going to exceed. You're not going to achieve that great success. You're not going to thrive, which is the title of the sermon, right? I'm not interested in surviving. I want to thrive. And God gives us the tools to do that if we apply them to our lives. So James chapter 3, look at verse 14. It says, But if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. So look, just be honest. If you're here right now and you're bitter about your job, look, just be honest. Just acknowledge that before God and get it right. And God will see your heart and he will help you. Because I'm telling you, carrying around that bitter, look, I've been bitter before. We all have. It's something that we all deal with. You know, but when you let go of that, I mean, it's a great thing. And that's point number three. When we aren't bitter, things get better. When we aren't bitter, things get better. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 31 says, "Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice." Turn to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5. So Paul's telling the Ephesians, hey, just let all this bitterness go. Just let it go. Understand that your boss isn't really in control of your life like he thinks he is or she thinks he is. It's God. And I mean, I'll tell you, that really changed my whole outlook at work. I can go to work peaceful, no matter what goes on. I understand, okay, you know, no problem. I'm not going to get bitter about this. I'm just going to do my job and let the chips fall where they may. You know, and God is always taking care of me, always, every time. So Matthew 5, look at verse 41. It says, "And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain." Look at it again. "And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain." So what is he saying there? Hey, your boss wants you to wash your car, wash your work vehicle. All right, no problem. I'll wash that and I'll wash somebody else's. God wants you to make pizzas, 10 pizzas. No problem. I'll make 20. Your boss wants to jog you a mile. No problem. Let's go too. I'll work circles around you. That's what he's saying. Hey, you know, when you're tasked with a task, do that task well and do more because you can do more. You can do more. We can all do more. And that's the success that we want. That's what's going to make you a successful person, is having that attitude. Understanding that God's in control of your promotion. Don't get bitter when you get these orders at work, when you get these tasks, when you get these jobs. Just decide, hey, I'm going to do that, but I'm going to also do more. Not to be a suck-up. And they're going to accuse you of that, too. They're going to say, oh, you're just a little suck-up. You're just trying to get on the boss's good side. Look, no, I'm not. I don't care. I don't care what he thinks. I don't care what I never have, and I never will. All I care about is pleasing God, and doing a good job at work is one way to do that. Doing a good job. So somebody compels you to go a mile, just go with them too. No problem. You want to play games? We'll play games all day. That's what he's saying here. So moving on. So with promotion comes power. But with power comes problems. If you decide to follow these steps, eventually you're going to get promoted in your jobs. Right, you're going to get more responsibility, but we need to learn how to manage that responsibility. And so I want to give you some tips that I learned. And some of this stuff is what I was talking about earlier. Some of these tips are things that I wouldn't do running a church, but I would do running a crew. And I'm going to tell another story here. So I think I already mentioned how we're on the Seawolf crew. We docked the Seawolf. My crew's taken away. I've got a bunch of new guys. I'm trying to get all this work done. Well, a job comes down, and it's to disconnect a sewage line. And so, we were in charge of everything from radiological waste to sewage, just how it is. Anything that was, you know, I mean, I'm talking to your firefighting systems, all that stuff, we were in charge of that. So basically, when they needed a repair, like on the sewage or on, you know, their different types of water, they make all types of water, you know, we would basically come in and replace that with a temporary system and monitor that until the new one was ready to go in or the upgrade. That's what our job was. Well, it comes down to we got to disconnect this sewage hose. And I just mentioned that, right? And I got some young, zealous guys. They don't, you know, some guys had some zeal. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go get the paperwork. We got to disconnect this hose. I'll be right back. So I go up to the boss's office. I get the paperwork, talk with him for a little bit. I come back and I see this guy. We'll just call him Harvester. He was a graduate of Jerry Fulwell School, whatever that school's called. I forgot what that school's name was. And he was also a Army Reserve chaplain. So we used to have a lot of discussions, but we'll call him the Harvester. I look on board the ship, and he's standing there with the hose in his hand. I've got the instructions right here. You see, anytime you disconnect down there, there's a procedure, and there's signatures, and there's things that have to get done. He doesn't have any of that. He just heard the job, and he was like, oh, I'm gonna be a good boy, and I'm going to go do this job. So I run over there real quick. I'm like, hey, man, we kind of need to talk about this first. He's like, don't even worry about it, Joe. I already got it disconnected. I'm like, did they blow the hose down? He's like, yeah, they said they blew it down. And I'm looking at him like, well, they must have. And then all of a sudden, I hear this gurgling noise. All right? And I'm like, this is a big hose. This is a 2.5-inch hose. And it's about 200 feet to the service gallery. And I hear this gurgling noise. I know what that is because I've been around for a while. So I proceed to walk as fast as I can on the brow and get off the ship. And sure enough, sewage goes all over him. And it's running over the side of the submarine into the dry dock. Now, guess who was down in the dry dock? An inspection team from Washington, D.C. So, I went from hero to zero real quick that day. I hear these blood-curdling screams. Sailors are laughing. So I go over to the locker, pick up my phone. You know, the watch, he's like, boy, you're going to hear about that. Phone rings. I just press the talk speaker. All these cuss words coming out of the phone. My boss is just flipping out. He comes down there. I'm going to rip your head off, you know, all that stuff. That's just how he was. We called him epilepsy just because he just flips out like crazy. He's like, I'm going to kill you. I can't believe you let this happen. There was an investigation. The investigation saw that this guy had good intentions. He just didn't know what he was doing, and it was a byproduct of what they'd done to me. And so nothing happened to me. And this is where the story gets real interesting, where you can see God starting to work. So the next day, you know, well, before I get to that, this is kind of hard to explain. I always had two bosses. I had a project boss and I had a shop boss. One thought he was God, the other thought he was mammon. I'm not kidding. And so I never knew, like, who to follow sometimes. And so the best way to do business was just to get them to fight each other. And, I mean, that's it was fun. And so, you know, he comes down and he's like, hey, you know, don't worry about that. You know, nobody likes them guys down there anyways. You know, you got a bunch of guys from D.C. soaked in sewage. It's all right. Well, next thing, my boss, he gets off on some other rabbit trail. He calls in sick for the next 4 days for some other reason. He got mad. And so I had to fill in for him. And I'm in this meeting, and the submarine commander is a new commander. You know, he always walks around with a big thing of, you know, dip in his lip. Just a real tough guy type, you know, just does whatever he wants. But we'd done a lot of work for him already, and he kind of appreciated us. And he's like, Joe, I heard what you did, man. You know, and he's like, fist bump. You know, you got those guys. I hate those guys, you know. Good job. He's like, but don't do it again, all right? I'm like, all right. And you know, and he's like, you know what, man, I've seen you running around here. He's like, I know what they're doing to you. I understand. He's like, but you're not going to succeed if you keep just running around doing everything for everyone because you know how to do the job and they don't. And he taught me some valuable things. And you know what he was teaching me reminded me of Mark chapter 10, verse 42. You don't have to turn there. But it says, but Jesus called them to him and saith unto them, ye know that they which are accounted to rule over the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and their great ones exercise authority upon them. This guy fits that verse, you know, just an unsaved guy. But he had great authority, and he had a long career of exercising authority over people that exercised authority, you know, and so forth. This guy knew a thing or two about leadership. And some of the things he told me, I mean, I'm gonna go over them again, but I just want to give you a quick list. You know, he said, you need to learn how to give control, but don't give up control. And I'm going to go over these principles, because all these things that he told me are found in the Bible. He said, you need to learn how to give intent. And then he says, you know, your crew's new. You're undermanned. You're in trouble. He says, you know, and you're running around too much. You need to train your guys and give them ownership of their work. Otherwise, we're just going to keep dumping sewage on people, you know, and it's not doing your career any good. You're lucky you didn't get fired, dude. You know, he was a cool guy. And I'll never forget that. And I begin to apply these principles, and you'll see later, I'll go over it. It changed everything. And I'll finish telling the story at the end, but it really made us go pretty good. So I'm going to give you some tips for leadership here. And the first one is, as a leader, you should avoid fostering an environment that promotes not making mistakes as its main goal, right? If you're in an organization that's their main goal is just not making mistakes. Hey, we made it a day today. We didn't have any infractions. You're in an organization that is beginning to spiral out of control. And my guess is you probably always have last minute things pop up. Look, I've been there. That's how this organization was at this time. I've seen it, you know, I've lived it. And this is one of the things that he taught me. And he says, you know those DUI boards? It's like, I'm going to get rid of them. You know what a DUI board is? Has anybody been in the military here? If you're in the military, they have these DUI boards. And basically, it's this big, giant billboard thing. And it says, how many days since the last DUI? Right? And he says, you know, Joe, you notice that board is gone. I ripped it off. I got rid of it. He's like, that's like a rule that we're supposed to have that. He's like, but the problem with that is that after the 30 days, okay, these guys get a four-day weekend because we had 30 days with no DUIs. He's like, and then the next day, someone gets drunk, they drive, they kill somebody, and we just repeat the cycle. He says, because we've made not making that mistake our goal, and we can never achieve greatness. He says, I wish I could get these losers to quit drinking. And this is an unsaved guy. That's what he said. I wish we could just stop them from drinking, so I'm just going to get rid of that stupid sign. And we're not going to talk about it. We're not going to do that. They wound up becoming one of the ships that had the least amount of DUIs because he took that step. He said, you know what? We're not just going to go through life making, you know, not being in trouble as our main priority, because what that does is it hinders your performance. Then all you're worried about, all you can think about, is just not making mistakes. You could never go above and beyond when that's your goal. And what's the goal of leadership? It's to inspire people to do more, right? And so what he was telling me is, hey, don't be afraid to make mistakes. Don't be afraid to step outside of the box. You know, follow the processes, follow the main rules, but some stuff, he's like, you're just going to have to get rid of it and just roll with the punches. You're just going to have to swim with the sharks, is what he told me. You know what? And he was right. Turn to Joshua chapter 24. So point of leadership tip number one was, as a leader, you should avoid fostering an environment that promotes not making mistakes as its main goal. So Joshua chapter 24, I know we read this morning, but like Brother Stuckey said, you know, it's good for us to hear the same things over and over again. So point number two is, if you want people to think, don't just give them instructions, give them intent. Don't just give them instructions, but give them intent. Give them that sense of urgency. So Joshua 24, look at verse 14. Now therefore, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the flood and in Egypt, and serve ye the Lord. And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom ye will serve, whether the gods of your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land ye dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. See, that's intent. Joshua didn't just give them the instruction, hey, do this because I said so. He said, this is what I'm going to do because it's important. It's a commandment from God. I don't care what you're going to do. I mean, obviously he does care, but he says, this is what we're going to do, right? That's the intent there. But look at the result in verse 16. He says, and the people answered and said, God forbid that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods. So they give intent back. If you want your people to think, give them intent. And when you give your people intent, they will give intent back to you. I promise you. It's not going to always be perfect. You're going to go through some heartache when you decide to follow this type of leadership, but it works. Trust me, it does work. You give people intent, they will give intent back to you, because what it does is it shifts the psychological ownership onto them. That's what it does. You see, that's what Joshua did here, is he transferred that psychological ownership of serving God to them, right? He didn't say, just do this because I said so. And if you think about it, that's what God does with us, right? He left us with his word and said, hey, you know, do these things, and these things will happen. Follow my commands, and you know, you'll be blessed for it, right? So it's the same thing. Learn to communicate intent, and your people will, you know, in turn, give intent back to you. And so my guys would always come up to me and say, you know, Joe, can I do this job now, or can I do this? Can I do that? Can I, you know, stop asking me what you can do, right? What we're gonna do? I threw out all that. You see, before we would do a job, I was supposed to take this packet, right, and line by line say, okay, you're going to do this, you're going to turn this valve, you're going to shut it off, then you're going to cut the zip tie, then you're going to do this. I threw all that out. I threw all that stuff away, and what I did is said, hey, here's your job. Tomorrow, we're going to have an interactive brief, and you're going to tell me what you're going to do. You're going to go over this, you're going to tell me, and what that did is they're like, whoa, I'm going to own this, right? That transferred the ownership to them, but it made it so that they knew they were going to be quizzed about it, and they did the research. And they actually wound up loving it, and they wound up learning a lot more that way. They wound up, you know, doing the research. Well, I got to give the answers in the meeting now. I got to tell everybody what I'm going to do. And that change was hugely and wildly successful for us. That took my novice crew from being novice to being experienced very, very, very quickly, very quickly. I began to teach them everything. I even began to teach the youngest guy how to pay people, which I wasn't supposed to do. Because you know what? They tied my hands behind my back. I had no other choice. And I figured, you know, as long as I could keep the commander happy, I'm always going to keep my position. And so I wound up becoming permanent. Once you're permanent, you're permanent. There's nothing they can really do. I mean, I'd have to really do something pretty bad to get fired from my job. So I knew I could get away with not following some of the little stupid rules that people created. I just threw all that garbage out. If you were to come down to my crew, it would have been very hard for you to tell who's in charge, because what I would do is I just write all the jobs on the board. You know, I had all their folders, all their paperwork, all the dates of the briefs, you know, and obviously I was there to help them. But basically, I would say, okay, today guy that's been here for 2 months, you're in charge. You're going to take two or three guys with you, and you're going to do this job, right? And then, of course, I would always go over and check it, and I would use those opportunities as training. That's how I coped with it. And, you know, the commander was really pleased with how things went, and we wound up having pretty great success. So what I'm saying is, you know, if you want your people to think, give them that opportunity. You give them control. I'm not saying give up control, but give them control of their work. You know, when you move the authority, the authority to where the information's at, you'd be surprised at what people can do. I mean, most people, this is something that commander told me too. You know, he's like, most people come to work and they want to do a good job. Now, obviously, there's always those bad apples that don't. There's always those, and we have a way of dealing with them people, right? There are some people that just don't want to work. In fact, we had this one guy, he didn't like to work at all. He would literally sit down in the middle of the dry dock, Indian style, and say, I'm not going to work anymore. I'm done. I tried to work that guy into the ground. I would personally take him with me while everybody else, people that had been there for like a year doing all these high-profile jobs, right? I would take him with me. I would try to work him till the end of the day. I'd make him skip lunch, all of his breaks. He would just sit down and be like, I'm not going to work. Finally, after writing this guy up so many times, he actually wound up just quit coming to work because I rode him like a wild boar. And, you know, I don't do that to the guys that want to work, right? I save that for these special cases. And he sends me a text message 3 weeks later because I'm trying to get a hold of this guy. He's like, hey, I'm going to come to work Monday. I'm going to blow you up and shoot everybody. That's what he says. I was like, wow, I'm going to show my boss this because he flips out. I show him that. You know, they just goes nuts. They send me down to security. And they're like, okay, well, we're going to freeze his badge. So when he comes in Monday, you know, we'll basically arrest him. So they arrest him. And that Monday morning, they interrogate him. And by lunchtime, I see him in the shop. I'm like, this is weird. And I get a phone call to go down there. And they're like, we just think he's sad. He's had a rough life. I'm like, what? These people were begging. They were begging for an active shooter type scenario is what they were doing. That's just my opinion. I can't prove it, but the guy said he was going to blow us up. You know, he was going to shoot us, and now he's in the shop working on pipes and stuff. And they're just like, I just think he had a bad life. I mean, this is security. These are the people that are like, oh, say if you see something, say something. You know, these people are on a hair trigger to normally, you know, send a SWAT team after you and just, you know, arrest everybody. But yet, I have evidence that this dude wants to do harm to us, and he's 100 feet from my office. So one thing leads to another. They say, okay, well, we're just going to make it so he can't come near Dry Dock 6 anymore. He can't come near your boat. I'm like, wow, gee, thanks. You know, and he's on a special program. Turns out the guy had a brain tumor and kind of felt bad after after all that. But, yeah, that's how that wound up going. I kind of got off on a rabbit trail there. But anyways, intent. If you want your people to think, give them intent, they'll give intent back to you. Number two, as a leader, you should always stick up for your people, right? I mean, didn't Moses pray for the children of Israel even when they were in sin? Didn't he petition God? And God, I mean, Exodus chapter 32, it says, and God repented of the evil that he said he was going to do unto them because Moses prayed for them. You know, one thing that I would always do is that when somebody would come to my office and be like, oh, your guys did this, they didn't put this vent where I wanted, I'd be like, get out of here. You know, just go, I don't care. I was very harsh to those people. And then when they left, I'd be like, hey, man, what are you doing? You know, then I would talk to them. You see why this is, that's different from church. But what that did is they always knew that I had their back. And when your people know you got their back, man, they will bend over backwards for you. They will bend over backwards to help you out. And there were times where I needed them. I felt helpless and they always came through to me. And that's what I would do. That's not the right thing to do necessarily according to their policy. You know, when somebody has a complaint, but that's how I handled it. You know, somebody come in talking about one of my guys, I'd be like, you know what? Get out of here, dude. I don't want to hear you. And then my boss would call and be like, oh, don't worry. We took care of it. And I'm like, okay. You know, always have your people's back. Always take your back. Or take your people's back. You know, don't be so quick to throw people under the bus. Because it really doesn't profit much. Turn to 2 Kings chapter 4. 2 Kings chapter 4. You see, because what I don't want is I don't want a bunch of fearful, tight drones working for me. You know, and we as leaders shouldn't want that either. We want people to think for themselves and actually do what they're supposed to do. Now, the last part of this sermon, some of you have already heard before from Men's Preaching Night, but I'm going to go through it again. So go to 2 Kings chapter 4. We're going to take a look at this situation with Elisha and look at some of these leadership lessons here. So 2 Kings chapter 4, look at verse 38. 2 Kings 4:38 says, "And Elisha came again to Gilgal, and there was a dearth in the land, and the sons of the prophets were sitting before him. And he said unto his servant, Set on the great pot and seethe pottage for the sons of the prophets. And one went out into the field to gather herbs and found a wild vine and gathered thereof wild gourds his lap full and came and shred them into the pot of pottage, for they knew them not. So they poured out for that or for the men to eat. And it came to pass as they were eating pottage that they cried out and said, O thou man of God, there is death in the pot, and it could not eat thereof. But he said, Then bring meal, and cast it into the pot. And he said, Pour out for the people that they may eat. And there was no harm in the pot." So what's going on here is this is after Elisha resurrected the Shunammite son, right? And it's, you know, he's back in Gilgal. There's a dearth in the land, so there's a famine. There's a famine going on, and, you know, they're sitting at Elijah's feet. They're getting, you know, they're getting instructions. They're learning how to preach, learning how to do the things of God. And then it comes time to give an order. So Elisha says, okay, you know, let's make stew. And I said this at men's preaching night, and anytime you send a bunch of guys to go cook something, you're probably going to have problems, especially if you don't have formal training in cooking. I know if I were to go make something or mess with Jessica's chili, she wouldn't be too happy because I'll just dump all sorts of things in there. Not because I'm trying to be like, oh, you know, I'm tough. I don't know, just not genetically wired in me to cook things, I guess. But the first point I want to take from this passage is that a lack of competence with your followers will cause you problems, right? If you're going to give up control to people, you do have to ensure that you have competent people. Competence is the ability to do something successfully or efficiently. And we definitely see a lack of this in this passage here. Look at verse 39. It says, "And one went out into the field to gather herbs and found a wild vine and gathered thereof wild gourds his lap full and came and shred them into the pot of pottage, for they knew them not." So this is like my sewage guy, right? He's like, oh, okay, we're making the stew, we're making pottage, no problem. And he just runs out and he goes and he gathers these things that he doesn't even know what they are. His whole lap full, right? So he comes back with all these, and you'd think that maybe somebody would say something to him, but they don't, right? So he dumps it down by the pot, he picks them up, and he starts shredding them. So obviously that took time, right? Because he had his whole lap full of these things, and he shreds them into the pot. No one says a word to him. Nobody says a word. Nobody's like, hey, what is that? What in the world are there? What are those things? You see the lack of competence there? Somebody should have stopped this guy from doing that. I mean, and obviously if they did, we wouldn't read the miracle, but I think you can get the point. The point's very clear that, you know, a lack of competence with your people is going to cause you problems. So you got to be very careful at how you give control to people. Proverbs chapter 23, verse 23 says, "Buy the truth and sell it not. Also wisdom and instruction and understanding." You see, as a leader, you got to work hard to gain the truth. You got to work hard to gain that wisdom and instruction. And don't be afraid to pass that on. A lot of people in the workforce, they like to get this knowledge and get this wisdom and just hoard it because it makes them look good and it makes their followers look bad. That's the model that most people take. You know, I guarantee you, anybody in here that has a secular job, you've seen that before where somebody knows something and they just hoard that information to make themselves look good because they don't understand the things of God. They don't understand that promotion doesn't come from the world. It comes from God, at least for God's people. So point number two is a lack of clarity when giving instructions can lead to disastrous situations. If you look at verse 38, you know, Elisha does give this command. He says, "Set on the great pot, seethe pottage for the sons of the prophets." You see, under normal circumstances, this wouldn't be really a big issue, right? But because there's a famine in the land, because the situation has changed, you got to be cognizant of that. You have to be aware that, hey, you know, we can't be complacent all the time. You know, and that can be the tendency, right? If you have a repetitious job, you know, it can be real easy to just go on autopilot. And you as a leader, it could be real easy for you to just be like, okay, you know, everything's normal. But what if there's some kind of outside circumstance that's changed, right? You got to be aware of little things like that because that's what's going to set you apart as a leader. And so if you want to promote a successful working environment to your people, you got to be able to recognize when special training or instruction should be given. In Proverbs chapter 2, verse 11, it says, "Discretion shall preserve thee, understanding shall keep thee." Memorize that. Discretion shall preserve thee. You know, learning how to discern your situation and your surroundings, you know, that's going to preserve you. That's going to save you years on your life, save your health, you know, and really set you apart in the workforce. And getting that understanding. As a leader, you can't afford to be complacent, right? As a mom, you can't afford to be complacent. As a grandmother, as a grandfather, whatever you are, look, we're all kings and priests. We can't afford to get complacent in our walks. We have to keep moving on and keep leading. And number four is a calm character. Look at verse 40. It says, so they poured out for the men to eat, and it came to pass as they were eating the pottage that they cried out and said, O thou man of God, there is death in the pot, and they could not eat thereof. Now, I like this next verse. Look at verse 41. But he said, then bring meal. And he cast it into the pot, and he said, pour out for the people that they may eat, and there was no harm in the pot. So he doesn't freak out. He doesn't flip out, right? He's like, oh, you're going to die? No problem. Just go get some meal then, you know? Oh, you broke your leg? Well, let's go to the hospital. Get a cast. Just stop crying. That's kind of what it reminds me of. But he's just calm about it. And so as a leader, you want to make sure that you have a calm and collective attitude. Because when the leader flips out, when mom and dad flip out, guess what? Your followers, your kids, they're going to see that, and they're going to mimic that behavior, and they're going to flip out. They're going to realize that you don't have control, and that's just going to lead to more problems, lead to more disaster in your organization. So point number one was, you know, we need to learn how to avoid fostering that environment where the goal is just to not get in trouble. Number two was, don't just give instructions, give intent. Number three was, stick up for people, or stick up for your people. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 29 says, he that is slow to wrath is of great understanding, but he that is hasty of spirit exalteth folly. And I just wanted to point that out. I'm getting ready to be done here, but, you know, Elisha, we didn't see him react hastily, did we? He actually just very calmly said, well, then bring meal, you know, and God performed a miracle. There was no death in the pot, no harm, and that's how we should be, you know. You just got to discipline yourself and learn that when things go wrong, you got to stay level-headed if you're going to be a great leader. You got to do that because, you know, God's in control, like I've been saying throughout this whole sermon. God's in control. You may think that you are, but really, God's in control. When you decide to do things his way, when you decide to follow the instructions that God's given us, you're going to have great success. So just remember this. The three pillars that you need to ingrain in your people is competence, clarity, and a calm character. Right? Because when you're calm, they're going to be calm. They're going to mimic that behavior. And I said I was going to finish the rest of the story about what happened to me. And this kind of leads up right to right before I moved here. So we went from, I forgot what year it was, right when we docked the Seawolf. We went from dumping sewage on people and just always being in trouble, you know, just being notorious for, you know, just not doing things savory. You know, we were that unsavor towards management. Well, this head guy in our shop, this guy probably makes about $275,000 a year, very, maybe $300,000, very wealthy guy. The top guy in the shipyard, well, for our shop, this guy hated my guts. One day I get a phone call, and two of my bosses come down, and they're like, hey, we need to go have a talk. They take me out to the pier, and they're like, yeah, we'll just call the superintendent Dirty D. That's what we used to call him, Dirty D, because he'd always do dirty stuff. And this guy is a psychopath to the T. This guy fits psychopath reprobates like a glove. This guy was a psychopath. And they say, hey, he's complaining about this, this, and this over here on the pier. And I'm like, that's not my stuff. That's the aircraft carrier. And they're like, dang it. And they take their hats off. They say, take your hat off. We're going to have a hats off meeting right now. They're like, look, Joe, Dirty D hates your guts. We've even asked him why. And he says, he just, something about you he just doesn't like. And he's coming for you. You have to be perfect. They're like, you know that Bible that you read every day? Maybe you should start praying because we don't want to lose our jobs, basically is what they were telling me. We want to help you, but we're limited. Our hands are tied. We can't. And this guy was always coming after me. You know, so I did, you know, did all these steps. I just, you know, made sure to be extra diligent throughout my career, you know, just get work done, right? I just got a lot of work done. Got into some trouble here and there, but we always got work done. Well, about 2 months before we moved here, there's an award ceremony. Normally, I would just skip out. I wouldn't even go, you know, and they're always getting on me like, how come you don't come to the award ceremony? You never come to the pizza parties. I got more important things to do. Remember, you took half my crew, remember? I don't have time for your little dog and pony shows. That was my attitude about it. So they're like, tomorrow is an award ceremony. You have to go. You and your whole crew has to go. I'm like, why? You know, and they're like, just because, just do it. Now, nobody in a million years would have thought was going to happen what happened. So we go there, right? And some of the upper management guys are looking at me. They're just shaking their head. Dirty D's up there with a folder. you know, and they're giving out supervisor of the quarter. And my shop had probably about 1,000 people in it. I never in a million years thought that I would have got this award, right? And they called my name as supervisor of the quarter. And everybody was, most people were cheering real loud, you know. Some people were like, is that how you get promoted? By dumping sewage on people and not going to meetings and just being disobedient? I hate Joe. I hate his guts. You see, because when I first got promoted, there was probably no less than 10 union grievances filed against me for that because I had excelled so fast. And so all those people were up in arms. You know, I walk up there, you know, all these guys are shaking my hands. They're like, man, that God of yours really did something for you, you know. And Dirty D's there with my award, you know, he does this like three-finger shake, and he's like, good job, you know. And it's kind of funny because then they take your picture and they put it outside the superintendent's office. You know, they took my crew's picture because they won best crew of the quarter. And the last thing that I knew that he ever saw was my ugly face for that whole quarter, and the faces of my crew members. And and it's because I took that commander's advice. I took that what he told me, and what I've learned in the Bible, and I just applied it. I just did it. You know, my boss, he comes in, you know, it's about lunchtime. It's like, dude, I can't believe you won that, man. You're getting all this, you know, this bonus money, this time off. He's like, dude, this is crazy. They're like, we're not getting any more work done today. Let's just go home, you know. So, you know, I call Jessica, I'm like, oh, you want to pick me up at the ferry? You know, you're not going to believe what happened. But, you know, that's how God rescued me. You know, I mean, I never thought that something like that would happen after all the stuff. I wish I could tell you more stuff that he did to us, but I just can't. I don't have time, and, you know, it's just not really that important. The point is that when you apply things that God says to apply in your life, God will rescue you. Promotion comes from God, not from man. And so I just hope that kind of helps get that point across to you. You know, our crew went from dumping sewage to being the best. We weren't just the, and I'm not trying to be prideful, but we were the best. There was no other crew that could come close to us in budget, in leave, in morale, none of it. None of it. And that's why he had to sign that document and give me that cow pie grin on his face, was because God promoted me. You know, God promoted me in the sight of men and my crew. And to this very day, all those people that were on my crew have excelled in advancement. Now, none of them are saved, but they remember those principles, you know, and they have applied them in their lives, and it's brought them great success. And anyways, I just hope that this was an encouragement and a blessing to you. Let's bow our heads and have a word of prayer. Lord, thank you for this opportunity to preach. I just pray that you bless the fellowship and the services to come. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.